Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. Campaigning has resumed after the London Bridge attack on Saturday night, and Theresa May has returned to the Royal United Services Institute, the place that she launched her campaign for the leadership, to restart her campaign for re-election. Here's what she had to say.
I called this election because as we face the start of the crucial Brexit negotiations in just a few short days, I believed it would be essential for the British government to be in the strongest possible position going into those talks. That remains the most critical issue in this campaign.
I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by my colleagues James Forsyth and Katie Bowles to discuss this. So James, in the aftermath of yet another terrorist attack, the third in 3 months, I guess it makes sense for a Conservative leader to talk about security and hope that this is the best card for her to be able to play.
So I think obviously the terrorist attack at the weekend, following on from the Manchester bombing and then before that the Westminster Bridge attack, has obviously pushed the issue of terrorism up the agenda. And I think you can see how the politicians are changing in the way that they react. I thought it was very telling that after the Manchester attack, that neither Theresa May nor Amber Rudd mentioned the word tolerance in their statement. The mention of tolerance from Theresa May was in to say that we have tolerated extremism too much.
Her phrase was enough is enough, which does make you wonder at what point enough wasn't enough.
I think you can see that Theresa May is moving to a kind of more hawkish position on this domestic security agenda. When she was Home Secretary, she was the person who was kind of, that famous spat between her and Michael Gove, you know, she was the person saying, kind of, hang on a second, calm down, let's be careful about this. She sounded much more hawkish, I thought, yesterday, you know, with this enough is enough, that things have to change, they can't go on as they are. And I think there is also, in this final days of the election campaign, there is obviously going to be a question, which is, the Tories are pointing out that Jeremy Corbyn has voted against all sorts of anti-terrorism legislation over the, you know, it's not just one or two bills, it is basically every piece of anti-terror legislation since Corbyn has been an MP. But Jeremy Corbyn is hitting back, saying, you know, who was Home Secretary and who cut the police, trying to turn the tables on Theresa May. I think one of the things we've seen in this campaign is that in crude political terms, you'd have thought that the issue of security rising up the political agenda would have benefited the Conservatives.
It hasn't been as
clear-cut a benefit to them as one would have expected, which I think is typical in some ways of how Labour has boxed clever during this election campaign.
Now, Katie, Jeremy Corbyn was trying to change his tactics yesterday. He was pointing out that Tories cut the police numbers, therefore shouldn't be surprised if we're more vulnerable as a result. Now, this is a new refrain for him, but I guess there's a certain logic to it. If you're a Labour Party leader, why wouldn't you try to associate Tory cuts with the notion of Britain being more vulnerable to terrorism as a result?
Yeah, and I don't think Jeremy Corbyn is someone who is known for wanting lots of police on the street. But this was quite a deft move from him to change tactic. We've heard Labour link foreign policy to acts of terrorism. But I think by going directly to police cuts, that is something that's going to resonate a lot more with the public.
And that's Corbyn's big switch, because first of all, his first instinct after Manchester was to talk about foreign policy. That went down very badly. When he's talking about 20,000 fewer police, he seems to be getting more headway.
Yeah, I think that will have much more cut through. But you do also have to remember Labour actually backed police cuts in 2015. So it's not, you know, there is still stones in this glass house.
Even Steve Hilton, David Cameron's former advisor, has been on Twitter earlier on today basically making Jeremy Corbyn's point as well.
I mean, we say even Steve Hilton, but I don't think it's that surprising that still Steve Hilton is going for someone in the Conservative government, even a former colleague. But yeah, he has made this point. But then again, he also went for Cameron on the EU. And that meant when this was raised in the Q&A, Steve Hilton's criticism, it's very easy for Theresa May to shrug it off by pointing out that he has a bit of a habit here.
Right, so sort of that happened in the Q&A afterwards, did
yeah,
it? She was asked, what do you think about Cameron's former advisor saying, he was saying basically she should be resigning rather than standing for re-election.
Yeah, he said that you should resign, and she said, well, I'm not the first, you know, person in government that Steve Hilton's gone for. And that seemed to satisfy the hacks to some extent.
But I think Jeremy Corbyn, in another example of Labour's campaign being quite nimble, has said that Theresa May should resign. You know, he's echoed these criticisms. Mm. Now, it seems a bit odd for the leader of the opposition to say the Prime Minister should resign when we're 3 days away from polling day. But by using the same phrase, I think he ensures that Hilton's criticism gets reported more than it otherwise would.
And the interesting thing, James, is I've been really struck in this campaign how the Tories really struggle with rebuttal. They should be able to point out that, yes, the police numbers went down by 20,000, but look, crime fell by a third. There is absolutely no way you can link the decline in police numbers to greater insecurity or greater threat. But they don't seem able to make or rebut arguments in the way that the new Labour machine would have done very well in its day.
Look, I think it is gobsmacking that get up against an opponent who has voted against every piece of anti-terrorism legislation in his time in Parliament, pretty much. The Tories were on the defensive this morning on this issue of security. You know, when Jeremy Corbyn can get to your right on security and you can't stop him, you are doing something very wrong. And I do find it odd that they sent out Karen Bradley this morning. I know she's close to Theresa May. She was a Home Office junior minister under her. But surely the first Tory to go and speak in political terms, as opposed to David Davis's is kind of, you know, relatively non-political interview yesterday after his terrorist attack, should have been one of the big Tory figures charged with keeping us safe. You know, Amber Rudd has had a very good campaign. She would have seemed a more obvious person to use. Or Michael Fallon, the Defence Secretary, a very competent media operator. You know, or what it seems very odd selection by the Tories here.
Yes, Katie, Karen Bradley, the Culture Secretary, was on with Piers Morgan this morning, and he was asking her time and time again, has the number of armed police grown or not? She wasn't giving an answer. And of course, there were kind of parallels there with Diane Abbott's famous brain fade. She wasn't on the next scale of Diane Abbott, but on a morning where the Tories needed to show that they were completely across this agenda, they end up sending out the Culture Secretary as the cabinet member of the morning, who is, surprise, surprise, unable to answer a question on security.
Well, I think with Diane Abbott and that meltdown, she just didn't actually know the numbers.
And so she was the Shadow Home Secretary who was supposed to be in charge of them, so she was more culpable.
Yeah, but I think that was, you know, actual ignorance, whereas I think Karen Bradley was probably more willful ignorance. She may well did know the answer to the question, she just didn't think it was a helpful thing to bring out.
Because the answer is that the number of armed police is going up, but it's still lower than where it was a few years ago.
Exactly, and Piers Morgan asked her three times, and three times she avoided it, and it just wasn't a good look.
But James, the armed police were able to shoot dead the terrorist 8 minutes after first getting the call. Now, surely, by any standards, this should illustrate a police operation that was pretty on top of things yesterday. It's difficult to look at what happened and at any point and think, well, the police response was shambolic, they should have done this, that or the other. I mean, it was an atrocity what happened in London Bridge, but to have that atrocity resolved so quickly, you would think the Tories ought not to be on the back foot here because there are no evident policy failures.
Well, I think as our colleague Will Haven, who was on London Bridge in the immediate aftermath of this terrorist attack, pointed out, the armed police got there very, very quickly. And unless you want to arm every police officer, which I don't think any British political party quite rightly does, 8 minutes is pretty fast to kill three attackers in a kind of crowded urban area. You know, I mean, that was impressively rapidly resolved. I think there is a thing here, which is, as you say, the Tories in this campaign have been oddly not on the front foot. You know, up against the Labour Party that is led by someone who is massively out of the mainstream of British public opinion, you know, who has a record as long as your arm, who has a kind of series of quotes and statements made to kind of every left-wing fringe group over the last 30 years. The Tories don't seem to have all this ready. You know, I mean, where is their kind of version of New Labour Excalibur so that whenever anyone says anything, they can kind of just... they can just produce all of the quotes over the years, where Jeremy Corbyn has been on the other side of a terrorism issue. It does seem puzzling.
Mm-hmm. Of course, New Labour's Excalibur, you know, the rumour was it was a great computer. And in fact, it was one guy, Adrian McManaman, who had this encyclopedic memory. And it just seems, Katie, as if the Conservatives are struggling in this campaign because it almost looks as if Theresa May wasn't ready for this campaign, that she has ended up, as James says, tripped up over issues she ought never to be tripped up about. And when she came out today giving her speech, we saw the return of the word strong and stable on the podium, words we haven't heard since her notorious backtrack over the manifesto. So it seems strange that even she is being relatively shy about repeating what used to be, only a few weeks ago, her original and strongest claim for re-election that she was the strong and stable prime minister.
Yeah, strong and stable had a week off and now it's back, it seems. But it still looks rather shaky. And I think the whole problem here with the Tories' campaign so far is that they thought just by having Jeremy Corbyn as the opposite number, they could just point out how rubbish he is and maybe didn't need to like back up their own policies or prepare for attack lines. And she's found that she has basically come undone over things that you normally wouldn't come undone for. But I think that it's just because they thought with Jeremy Corbyn, they wouldn't have to.
It would be a walkover.
Yeah.
It turns out it was a fight and a fight they were not ready for, not in the way that everybody had thought they were.
And she kept saying she wasn't complacent, but a lack of research does suggest you are.
Now, James, she's tried to widen it from security to economic security. This was, again, one of the Linton Crosby's themes of David Cameron's campaign 2 years ago. And she's talking about the deficit for the first time in a while. Here's what she had to say.
We know that it is wrong to pass to future generations a bill you cannot or will not pay yourself. Because every pound the government borrows falls to others, those who come later, including people not yet born, to pay back. If we're serious about restoring the contract between the generations, there is no more important thing we can do than seek to balance the books and pay down the debt. That is a simple matter of justice that only the Conservative Party understands.
Now, James, it used to be the case that no Tory could give a speech without referring to the deficit. Over the last few weeks, Theresa May has hardly mentioned it at all, and to hear it mentioned in the speech is to be reminded of how it's dropped out of the Tory vocabulary. Do you think this has been a mistake?
Well, in 2015, the Tories weaponised the deficit. That basically, every time Ed Miliband talked about spending even a penny, they said, right, is that more borrowing, which is bad for the deficit, so not allowed, or is that more tax? And it completely hemmed Labour in. And Labour ended up with a kind of nothing economic offer because they couldn't rebut this Tory attack line. But because the Tories are now not talking about closing the deficit, even within the next parliament, even if you elect a Tory government, even if you give Theresa May a majority of 200, the Tories won't close the deficit in the next 5 years. They are not talking about doing it until 2025. And when it is that far off, it then becomes very difficult to attack Labour for borrowing more. You know, one very senior cabinet minister was complaining that you'd think that if the Tories weren't going to close the deficit until 2025, they might have something of a retail offer for voters. You know, more spending on things that voters like, or tax cuts.
If you're going to give up your reputation for fiscal prudence, then why not splurge?
And they're not exactly doing that. And the problem they've got is that Labour, Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party, are promising to splurge on everything. They've got free tuition fees. You know, no tax rises for anyone. You know, other than the rich, inverted commas. And I think the Tory problem is that they can't make the argument, which is clearly true because they've left it too late in this campaign, that if you set out to borrow as much as Labour wants to borrow extra, the markets would not lend it to you at the same rate. You know, in the same way, if you turned up to your mortgage company and said, I want to remortgage my house and I want to double the size of my mortgage, the bank wouldn't lend it to you at the same interest rate that they lent you the initial loan. Yeah.
But these are all arguments that have been abandoned by Theresa May's Conservatives. I mean, she talks about how Conservatives will always keep your taxes low, but her published plans envisage her raising the tax burden to a 35-year high. So she can't even claim plausibly to be a low-tax Conservative.
I had a Tory cabinet minister on the phone to me about a week or so ago saying, why aren't you all making more, as in the press, of the fact that the IFS say that the tax burden under Labour will rise to the highest level since 1945? And I pointed out it's a rather difficult argument to make as it denounced Labour, because the IFS also said that the tax burden under the Tories would rise, I think, to the highest rate in 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a problem here, which is, yes, Labour are more extreme, but the Tories are guilty of the same sin that they are trying to highlight. And it is inherently less effective when you are going to increase the tax burden to then turn around, but we're not doing it as much as them, is not as powerful an argument.
Now, talking about Tory guilt, Theresa May closed her speech with something of a confession for her own campaigning style. Here she is.
A year ago, I launched my campaign for the leadership of the Conservative Party in this very room. I said at the time that I'm not a showy politician. I don't tour the television studios. I don't gossip about people over lunch. I don't go drinking in Parliament's bars. I don't often wear my heart on my sleeve, and that's true. But I said then, and I say now, that if ever there was a time for a Prime Minister who is ready and able to do the job from day one, this is it.
Now, Katie, this was word for word what she said when she stood for election. Basically, she's not a showy politician. She doesn't wear her heart on her sleeve. this time it sounded almost like an apology, saying yes, and I haven't been a particularly good campaigner either. She's trying to make a virtue, I guess, out of her shortcomings on the campaign stump.
Yeah, I think when it was in the leadership election, you got the impression she was marking herself out as different. She wasn't a PR-y person, and this seemed like a positive. But this time it seemed to be like, look, I know it hasn't been a great campaign.
I know I've been an awful campaigner. Yeah,
sorry about that, but, you know, just get me over the line on Thursday. I promise I'll be okay again.
Yeah, and James, I mean, that's a funny thing. We can understand why Theresa May wanted to have an election. She was, you know, 20 points above Jeremy Corbyn. But she has never had to actually win an election. She didn't even have to win an election to be party leader. If she had gone through there, she might have, you know, had to focus a bit more on her ability to respond quickly, which she struggled to do in the manifesto launch, hence the U-turn. And her general chat, I mean, it seems that she's struggles to say anything beyond cliche and banality for this whole campaign, and her popularity rating, what used to be so high, has come down as a result. So do you think she's going to end up with a bigger majority, but her authority and stature diminished as a result of this campaign?
Well, I think that you've got to look at what Tory MPs think par is. And they think par in this election campaign is a majority of about 80 seats. Mm-hmm. I think if a majority is below 80 seats, Tory MPs, her authority will not have been enhanced by this election. I think if the majority is below 50 seats, there is a definite argument that it is being reduced. I think a lot of Tory MPs will turn around and say, hang on a second, you chose to go to the country 3 years early up against a guy who even most of his own MPs think is unelectable as Prime Minister in Jeremy Corbyn, and we only, you know, and we didn't get a majority of more than 50. You know, I think that when she chose to go for this election, she moved the company that she was being judged against. She basically was inviting comparison with Thatcher and Blair. And so she has to realise that she is going to be judged against their electoral landslides and their electoral performance.
Well, Theresa May might still get her landslide. She might get in majorities lower than Cameron's. She might lose her majority entirely. All of these scenarios are envisaged by various opinion poll companies. It's strange to say this, but yet again, the result of this election is thrillingly unpredictable. Stay with us. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store, and to the magazine itself from just £1 a week on spectator.co.uk/subscribe. Thanks for listening.